Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
109 now on WGN. So, hi, it's John Williams. Lots to do in this first half hour. In just a couple of minutes, we'll visit with Andy Field, the ABC News correspondent. We will preview the impeachment hearings that take place tomorrow. At this time tomorrow, the House Intelligence Committee will actually be hearing testimony from a few people, none of the ones the Republicans want, not all of the ones the Democrats want, but the Democrats control that room, and so it'll favor the Democrats, if you will. Anyway, we'll just talk a little bit in a few minutes about what's going to happen tomorrow. What will you be seeing on TV? What does it mean? Andy Field from ABC News and I will break that down for you in just a few minutes. Last night, Brenda and I were clicking back and forth between two really terrific programs. One was the DePaul basketball game when they clobbered Iowa. DePaul clobbered Iowa last night. I'm a DePaul basketball fan. I'm a basketball fan, a college basketball fan, and a Chicago college basketball fan. So props to Loyola and our very own Northwestern. Go Cats. But I go to DePaul games, too. And I've been following that team because I'm a Big East fan. I'm a Butler basketball fan. Anyway, enough about that. This DePaul basketball team, you're going to be hearing good things about this year. It is as athletic a team as DePaul has run out onto the floor in a very long time. And they were up on Iowa by as many as 25 points. At one point, Iowa cut it to 18, but then it went right back to 22. They owned Iowa for the whole game, and it didn't look like a fluke. It's funny because DePaul is now 4-0 for the first time in years. DePaul played its first three games against much lesser opponents, and I thought we're going to get clobbered by Iowa because we didn't look that good our first three games. And then it all just sort of came into being. Nine guys scored, eight guys got double minutes. It's a deeper bench, and it's a better team. If you're into college basketball and you want to surf around a little bit, I'd recommend you spend some money on or some time on watching DePaul because that was a lot of fun. The other show we clicked back and forth from was Rock the Block. I don't know if anybody's watching that around here, but it's one of those design decorating shows. Instead of just doing a kitchen, though, they gave four designers, one of whom was the Windy City Rehab lady from Chicago. They gave four designers whole houses and $175,000, and they said, redo it completely. It was a competition show.
That sounds fun.
It was pretty cool. It's fun to watch. Rock the Block. I think it's on HGTV.
Of course it is.
Right. What am I kidding? You knew that. And the woman from Chicago did not win, but if you're familiar with Windy City Rehab, you know her ego will recover. It was a fun show to watch. So that was our evening last night as it got record cold. You know, I just saw a piece in the USA Today today, and the Sun-Times ran it as well, what to do to start your car when the weather is this cold. By the way, Producer Elif, can you tell us what the, I think we did this in the news, but what is the average high temperature for today, please?
John, the average high temperature in Chicago on November 12th is 49 degrees.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so nice.
I know!
Honestly, even though I waited a bit after starting my car, it took like 2 miles before it went over 20 miles per hour.
Oh,
it was
really?
Just like,
that's exactly what our cars sound like on days like this. They just do this.
And you're like, I know, me too,
no,
but we got to go.
I'm sorry, but you're a car. And just here's an interesting sentence in that story in the paper. It says 95% of the cars on the road today do not use carburetors, so you no longer need to warm them up on cold days. I don't know what all that means, but the idea of sitting there and letting it idle to warm up is not necessary. They say rather than letting it sit there and idle to warm up, better you just drive the car slowly with it making what noise, Lauren Lapka? It's the recommendation by AAA Motor Club.
I'll also rev the engine a few times before I even leave the driveway. But I don't know how much that helps.
Okay, the House Intelligence Committee on the hearings on the possible impeachment of the president start at 9 o'clock Chicago time tomorrow. Should go till about 1:30 our time tomorrow, but maybe as late as a little after 3. There's a second hearing scheduled for 8 a.m. our time on Friday. There will be committee hearings next week as well. This is not the impeachment hearing itself. It is the preliminary ramp-up to the drawing up of the articles of impeachment, if it comes to that. Who's going to testify? People who have already testified behind closed doors. Now we get a chance to see and hear them. All of them will tomorrow be experts on U.S.-Ukrainian policy. William Taylor, the top diplomat in Ukraine, George Kent, a guy who said Rudy Giuliani was getting in the way, and Maria Yovanovitch, the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, who she says Rudy Giuliani pushed her out of the way. Who won't testify is just as interesting. Mick Mulvaney said he's not going to testify. The whistleblower is not going to testify. Hunter Biden and Joe Biden are not going to testify. The Republicans drafted a letter of 9 people they want to testify, including Hunter Biden, his business associate, a DNC staffer, some State Department people and contractors, Kurt Volker. They will not be called to testify. One other note about the rules. Normally, when we're used to these things, they get their 5 minutes, and then they have to yield to the next member of Congress. 5 minutes. But in this case, Devin Nunes, who's the ranking Republican, and Adam Schiff, the Democrat, can go much longer. They can go 45 minutes, and in their time, they can defer to lawyers who will question these people. They say it's going to play like a TV show if it plays the way Democrats want. That is, they're going to put their best stuff up front, make it as riveting as possible, and try and hook you in. Andy Field from ABC News is on a phone line. Hi, Andy. It's John in Chicago. How are you?
Good, John. I was hearing you talk about the cold there. I lived in Green Bay, Wisconsin back in the late 70s, early 80s, and I remember the coldest day I ever had was in Chicago. It was somewhere in that time period. It was so cold that when the fire department was putting out fires, the water was freezing as it left the hoses.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Yeah, we got, and you know, it's not like we don't know about that, but we don't know about that the second week of November. That's the thing. That's the kick in the pants here, Andy. It's that we can do that in January. We will, but November, are you kidding me? 11th and 12th? No way.
Yes. Well, Chicago didn't get the Windy City name for nothing.
No, I think Washington, D.C. could get that, too, for the bluster.
Oh, well, but that's hot wind, a lot of hot air.
For the bluster. What is going to stand out to you tomorrow? What should we be looking for as we listen or watch the hearings?
Well, it's going to be a little different than, I guess the last big thing we had like this was Robert Mueller when he testified, and there were really hours and hours of long-winded opening arguments by virtually every member on the committee there, relentless attacks on Mueller's credibility by Republicans. I don't think you're going to see as much of that tomorrow because of the way the rules are set here. As you mentioned, Adam Schiff and the Republican ranking member will have a chance for opening statements, and that's it. And then Adam Schiff says he's going to defer to attorneys on the committee that are simply going to ask a series of questions that they've already asked and they already know the answers to. It's really just a matter of getting this out in the public because most people aren't going to read these transcripts. And as you mentioned, these are all Ukrainian experts. George Kent, the Deputy Assistant Secretary for European and Eurasian Affairs, may actually say something that is helpful to the president, beside the fact that he wasn't happy about the way Marie Yovanovitch was treated and how Rudy Giuliani was going around traditional methods here. But he's also going to testify that Kent was in government when Joe Biden was vice president, and that he brought up a possible conflict of interest with Hunter Biden being on the board of the Ukrainian energy company to members of Biden's staff. Nothing was done about it at the time, and it just kind of disappeared. And this is the primary reason that President Trump is making the case, saying, you know, we want to get after all corruption, including this part that he thinks Joe Biden and his son Hunter had something to do with corruption in Ukraine. Now, there is no evidence to say that's the case. It's been a debunked theory. Also, a theory that's been debunked is the fact that Paul Manafort, the president's former campaign chair, had basically put this in the president's head that it was Ukraine and not Russia that was hacking these DNC servers. There is no evidence to prove that this is the case. This was just one of these conspiracy theories, and yet the president used that as part of his reasoning for freezing aid to Ukraine.
But if you wanted to have a separate hearing or investigation of some sort, and I don't know who would do it, but the thrust of it was, let's see if there was something fishy, criminal, unethical, or illegal about Hunter Biden getting millions of dollars because his dad was the vice president. I'd be interested in that. I think you've got a case there of some description. But,
absolutely. But, I mean, listen, if there is something to investigate, it would be done. But what the president keeps bringing up is this infamous video of Joe Biden on some panel talking about the fact that the U.S. and others withheld aid from Ukraine until a corrupt prosecutor was kicked out. And I think he said something to the effect of, son of a gun, the next day the guy was kicked out. What isn't said and what isn't said by the president is that there is no, at least public connection that we've seen to Hunter Biden. But what we have seen is that the United States wasn't the only one that wanted that prosecutor out before they gave aid there. It was virtually every country in the European Union as well. So this was, and not only that, but Joe Biden really didn't have the power to do anything. He was the vice president. He was the emissary of President Obama at the time. And if anyone was going to make that decision and help Hunter Biden with any kind of favors for Ukraine, it would have been Barack Obama. And there doesn't seem to have been any incentive for Barack Obama to do that.
Almost seems to me like there's two separate conversations, and the Republicans are trying to shoehorn theirs into this one. This House committee hearing tomorrow is looking into whether or not the president may have broken the law, or at least committed an impeachable offense by using his office against his political adversary. That may, the Congress may determine that that's an impeachable offense. The Senate won't vote that way, but if the House wants to put forward articles like that, that's one thing. Another thing is, was there corruption, and was the president, don't you think this is one of their points, Andy, that they're going to say we were holding up aid until we had assurances that the corruption was taken care of in Ukraine? And evidence that they were corrupt was the relationship Hunter Biden had with Burisma, right?
That's exactly what Republicans want to say. It falls apart with the actual facts of the situation, which is that there were independent agencies that had already said that the corruption had been dealt with, and that's one of the reasons that Congress voted for the aid months earlier and said it had to be released right away. Well, it wasn't released right away, and now we have multiple sources and people testifying that the reason it wasn't released is that the president wanted to get this investigation out in the public. And the investigation specifically into the Democratic server and to Hunter Biden. So that argument doesn't seem to hold up when you look at why did Congress approve the aid if there was so much corruption. And the fact was they didn't think there was anymore.
Andy Field from ABC News covering the House, not the Judiciary Committee, the Judiciary Committee.
That's next.
Yeah. So they'll take what happened in the Intelligence Committee and the Judiciary Committee afterwards. I'm not exactly sure when this is going to take place. Well, and by the way, when the Judiciary Committee, help me with this, Andy, when they get witnesses before them, that will allow the president and his counsel the opportunity to attend the hearings, respond to evidence. They can question witnesses at the Judiciary.
That is, all of that is correct. The president keeps talking about the fact he doesn't get any due process. The fact is that you have to look at what goes on in the House as sort of a grand jury. Most people, when they're being investigated by a grand jury, have to go in there without their lawyers. They just get questioned. They don't get a chance to rebut in these grand juries. It's just the prosecutor basically runs the show, and that's exactly how the impeachment setup is. They are the prosecutors and the investigators, and if they put out an indictment, the president's chance to defend himself would be in the Senate, which is when the trial's coming out. And then the president can call the witnesses he wants to call without Democrats telling him what he can and cannot do. And I guess theoretically he could also call Hunter Biden if he wanted to, although I'm not quite sure how that would help him.
Okay, so that's all kicking off tomorrow morning, Chicago time at 9 a.m. The whole world will be watching. I think so. I mean, I don't mean to overstate this, but it seems like we are going on this sort of unstoppable path to at least drawing up articles of impeachment, and I'd be surprised if the House doesn't try and impeach the guy. I think everybody knows how
it went. It may be more than just Ukraine. There have been sources in the Democratic Party who've talked to us who say that they're looking very seriously as well when it gets to the Judiciary Committee of the 7 or 8 instances in the Mueller report where Robert Mueller said, look, this looks like the president and his team tried to obstruct justice. Because of a memo in the Justice Department, he was not allowed to bring these charges against the president because someone in the Justice Department said he can't charge a sitting president. Now, there have been judges since then who have said that, well, you can write that memo all you want, but it's never been tested in the courts, and this could very well be tested in the courts before this is all over.
Yeah, if I were the Democrats and they were, if the Democrats asked me for advice, I would say don't overplay your hand. Don't try and accomplish too much with your vitriol here. For instance, and maybe they should do this, maybe they should not, but just to give you an example of the piling on that Democrats have an opportunity to do, it's been suggested by some that the president's advice to, say, Mick Mulvaney not to testify is itself obstruction. Their lack of participation in the impeachment hearings will itself be an impeachable offense, say some.
That's possible, and Adam Schiff has said as much in various statements here. But what's interesting is that the Democrats have basically dropped these lawsuits trying to force them to answer subpoenas and testify. And the Democrats' response is, we've got enough evidence already. We don't need to add anything more to the list here, which is why you are not likely to see John Bolton or Mulvaney or any of these other top officials dragged into court via court order, or dragged into Congress to testify via court order.
Be interesting to see this week or next if the name of the whistleblower gets more publicly bantied about.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point because you know, this is another talking point from the Republican Party that says, you know, we got to get this whistleblower out here, we got to interview him, we got to find out why he brought all this stuff up. At this point, Democrats and almost all legal experts we've talked to said it's a moot point. They've already confirmed all this, and the president keeps saying, but the whistleblower, and their analogy is it's like someone calling the fire department, calling police, saying, this house is on fire. And so the fire department and the fire chief says, well, we're not going to put out that fire until we find out who called and told us. So the whole house burns down, but you know they're still looking for the person who called in the fire.
Nice to talk to you today, Andy. Stay warm in Washington, D.C., sir.
I hope you guys stay warm, too.
I'm hanging up now, sir.
You can laugh because you went from Green Bay to Chicago to out.
Andy Field, ABC News in Washington. Greatest single snowfall was the Chicago blizzard of what year? Bertrand, you want to give her a hand on that?
Well, there was the big one in 67, but I don't know if that was the record or not.
Steve says maybe 1967. You want to go with 67?
I was thinking 68.
The year's 67.
Steve, if she wants to go 68, this is America last
okay,
time I
right,
checked.
You're right.
The correct answer is 67.
Aww. This is America. Don't catch you slipping now.
But she should have gone with
Don't catch you slipping now.
Steve Bertrand. And
look what I'm whipping now.
67.
This is America. Don't catch you slipping now.
We on our Monday Mega Pros trivia quiz yesterday. We do a Monday Chicago-based quiz. Asked you about the records in Chicago weather, and 67 is the single biggest snowfall ever. We are about 33 degrees right now off the normal high. 33 degrees off the normal high. Normally we're in the upper 40s. Steve said it's 16 degrees for crying out loud. What's up with that? By the way, speaking of cold places, have you been following at all? This is a little trivial, but why not? Have you been following at all the story of Hockey Night in Canada and this guy named Don Cherry? He's like a 90-year-old legendary hockey coach for the Boston Bruins and other teams. And have you been following this?
No, this is what's great about your show, because I read headlines and then I never really know what else happens, like the Northwestern one and this one too.
Yeah, well,
I know he's kind of outrageous.
He is. He wears the most unbelievable outfits. I mean, crazy, colorful, coordinated, beautiful, bizarre outfits. He's handsome as hell, and he's full of himself, and he always has been. Don Cherry of Canada. And he's been known to say sometimes outrageous things. For instance, Elif, let's just play a little history of this guy on TV. How about Don Cherry on women in the locker room? Some of these are slightly dated. It's sort of a mashup we got this from of his career. But this is Don Cherry talking about women in the locker room.
I want to say something, first of all, okay? All right. I want to say something, first of all. I don't believe, and I really believe this, I don't believe women should be in the male dressing room. I know, wait a minute, I remember the first time it happened to me, guys are walking around naked.
Okay, thank you very much. Then this is Don Cherry talking about how some people don't have a level playing field in life. Some folks start out a little higher up the ladder, some people don't. This is the next cut, fair shake in life.
Why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't some kids feel like they haven't been given a fair shake in life? Ask Davis
in. Fair shake in life. Go out and get your own fair shake in life and work for it. Don't give me that stuff.
Some kids don't want to play in Canada, and he was asked or somehow wanted to opine about why some kids don't want to play hockey in Canada.
And why he doesn't want to come here?
He's
afraid. Oh, he said he'd come and play in front. But, Ron, did you fall off a turbo truck?
This is him on sometimes, I guess this is before they put the net up all the way around the hockey arena or not, but this is him on women at hockey games.
And you women are going to get mad at me out there. When you come to the games, keep your eyes on the puck. And I'm telling you, I've seen some awful smacks, and it's always a woman yapping away there.
Good grief.
That guy.
Can we just hear the yapping away there?
Yapping away there, eh? So that guy, in between the first and second period on Saturday nights in Canada, he's the legendary. And he always has his long-suffering journalist guy with him, you know, the other announcer, who always looks like he'd rather be at a proctologist's office. He's just sitting there with his glum look on his face while Don Cherry goes off. The other night, they were talking about Veterans Day and how on the 11th of November, a lot of people wear the poppies. Poppies are something you might purchase, and it supports veterans and military causes in the United States and in Canada, too. And it bothers him that he doesn't see enough people wearing the poppies. So, Elif, this is Don Cherry hockey night when he, and there's two words in this next soundbite that got him fired.
Downtown Toronto, forget it, downtown Toronto, nobody wears a poppy. You people love, you they come here, whatever it is, you love our way of life, you love our milk and honey, at least you could pay a couple of bucks for poppies or something like that. These guys pay for your way of life that you enjoy in Canada. These guys paid the biggest price. Anyhow, I'm going to run it again for you great people and good Canadians that bought a poppy. I'm still going to run it.
Run some video salute. But the two words that got him fired there are...
You people.
You people. You people got him fired. Because he's referring to immigrants. You people enjoy our land of milk and honey, but you're not willing to wear the poppy. And for that, they fired him. Now, maybe that was just the straw that broke the camel's back. I said...
Yeah, I'd say.
I almost hope so, because, you know... Nothing good about that rant of his, maybe. Or maybe you agree with him. I don't know. But I'm with you, Lauren, that whatever you think of that, I don't think there's enough there to cost you your job.
Right. So the intention is understandable. Yes, support veterans. You know, you'd like to see more support. But the way he delivered the message and the way he was viewing the message, apparently, based on the words he used, is not appropriate.
He's saying you people of color aren't as patriotic, I think, as the white Canadians. I think that's what he's saying. You know, in Toronto, there's a columnist at The Sun called Brad Hunter. And I reached out to him to ask him if he could put a little context to this. Hey, Brad, this is John. You're on WGN in Chicago. How are you?
Very well, thanks, John. How are you today?
Good. So we don't know anything about this guy or this story, but you just heard everything we know. What else should we know here, Brad?
Well, Don Cherry is, I mean, Canada's kind of a rural-urban divide, and a lot of people in the urban areas aren't so keen on Don Cherry's view, where he's beloved, you know, outside the cities among the hewers of wood and the those sorts of people. He's iconic. There's no equivalent on American sports TV to Don Cherry. He's bombastic. He's outspoken. He's loud. I think he's sort of the Tim Hortons guy that the average person in Canada likes to see themselves a little bit as.
I think he's the crazy uncle at the Thanksgiving Day table too, isn't he?
Oh yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, even among the most liberally minded can find a chuckle at some of the things Don Cherry says. But this time, I mean, he's 85 years old, and I think the grand poobahs at the state broadcaster and in corporate Canada have been gunning for him for quite a while, not really up with the brand sort of thing.
Well, you wrote a piece about this then, and to start, you sort of gave him his due, but as your commentary on his commentary went on, you said you can't do that. You particularly since, help me out on this, Brad, but you said if you look at the members of, say, the military in Canada, it's a rainbow of people. The white Canadians don't have special claim to being good Canadians. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I mean, I thought like Don Cherry to an extent, not to that extreme or anything like that, for a good deal of time. And then my daughter is an air cadet, and there was like hundreds of these cadets at their graduation sort of ceremony. And, there was, like 50% were people who were visible minorities. It wasn't the good old white small town Canada there, and these kids are great kids, all he had to do too was turn on the television on Remembrance Day, and he would have seen the ceremonies in downtown Toronto, and probably 50% of the people in downtown Toronto were people of color as well, all wearing poppies.
And that was thing that set him off, isn't it? How do you know if somebody's sufficiently patriotic or appreciates the sacrifice of the military? He says, well, they weren't wearing poppies. I didn't wear a poppy in Chicago yesterday. Nobody offered me one. I didn't see one. I would have bought or worn one had I should have gone out of my way. I didn't.
It's a little more hardcore here, John, but I think I've lost three. I've gone through three of them. So if he, got me last Thursday afternoon, he would have said, oh, my God, that guy's an unpatriotic schmuck. He doesn't have a poppy. When, in fact, I've gone through three of them. But and they were harder to find this year, to be quite honest.
So do you think that he should lose his job for saying you people?
No. I think we've gone to an extreme on all these things. The call-out culture, it's almost like the Salem witch trials.
Hold on, you don't like what he said, but you don't think it should cost him his job. Is that correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely. If you've seen a lot of Canadian TV, you'd say, oh, my God, he's the most interesting guy on Canadian TV. But I'm of two minds on it. I think probably he should be looking at the door, but should have this been the time? I'm not sure. As much as my own backlash against call-out culture and crucifying everybody who ever said, spit,
right.
So that's just me. But the learned folk at the broadcast companies are no better than I guess.
A little more sensitive to it maybe than I thought they would be. You can read our guest online, the Toronto Sun columnist Brad Hunter, on this other guy, Don Cherry. If nothing else today, do yourself a favor and do a Google image search of Don Cherry, because he is, he's fun to look at, if nothing else. I'm out of time, Brad, but it's nice to talk to you today. Thanks for joining us.
Terrific, John. Thanks a lot. Take care now.
Our best to you folks in Toronto. About the last guest, Tony wanted to say something. This is the guy in Canada. Hey, Tony, you're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hey, John. I just wanted to I think you got two issues here with the hockey commentator Don Cherry appearing to criticize immigrants for supposedly not supporting veterans in Canada. Number one, is his point valid? I personally don't think it is. I don't think there's any evidence that immigrants are more or less supportive of veterans here or in Canada. So I think he was... sorry, go ahead.
No. I mean, yeah, for all you and I know, a given immigrant might be a super patriot because they came here for a reason. But keep going.
Yeah, no, I think he's wrong. I don't think there's facts to support his statement. But, you know, people have been... It's his opinion, fine. But the reason he got fired, people forget this. He's in an entertainment business. Their job is to get as many people in the tent as possible. Now, you're a talk show host. You're going to say things that people don't agree with. That's your job. But on television, particularly television sports, which is supposed to be non-political, the management, understandably, wants as many viewers or listeners as possible. So to the play-by-play or the pre- and post-game, which he does. This was not a talk show. So if you're going to express an opinion and people don't like it, you're risking alienating the people who disagree with your opinion. So Cherry expressed what we might call an arch-conservative opinion, and he ticked off people who are not arch-conservative on this issue. Colin Kaepernick in the NFL here in the United States, he ticked off the conservatives because he took a very liberal stance on his position. Either way, they're in an entertainment business, and people forget that Colin Kaepernick's rights were violated because the NFL has blackballed him. So there are some people today who are saying Don Cherry's right to free speech was violated because he got fired for speaking out on whatever he chose to believe, right or wrong. No, in an entertainment business, you risk alienating the audience, and your job is to get as many people to sample your product and like it as possible.
I think you also risk alienating your boss, because what if Cherry was on next week, if Cherry was on this coming Saturday night, I think a lot of people would tune in to see what was going to happen. That kind of speech can be good for business. Ask Don Imus, ask Howard Stern, ask Steve Dahl, ask a lot of people in this business in this town. That's not, an unprecedented way to garner audience. I think what's also interesting is that some of these corporations are now, I think they've put some of these people in a precarious position. That guy's in that job not because he was vanilla, and then he does the sort of thing that he's been doing for years, and this time he stepped over the line and they fired him. I don't know this guy from Adam, but I'm just saying, I get his sin. I did not know right up that was a fireable offense.
I think you really summed it up there, because he is hired not to be vanilla, Don Cherry. You're absolutely right. And he's been doing this nationalist stuff for years, but it's always been defending Canadian players as opposed to European players, you know, things like that. They liked him being bombastic, but I agree with you. He went over, I think by your definition and mine, he went over the line, obviously by management's definition. And yeah, controversy sells. It brings listeners, it brings viewers, but at some point you cross over that line and you lose more than you gain. And they obviously decided that's what happened. And believe it or not, I used to know Don Cherry pretty well.
I'll be darned.
He's the same guy. Yeah, same guy now as when I met him in the late 70s.
Yeah.
And I heard you play a soundbite where he talked about women in the locker room and players are walking around naked.
Yeah.
When women first came in the locker room in the late 70s, that's true, and it was an issue. It is so different now. The locker rooms are bigger. There's better accommodations for the players. Yeah. I can guarantee you there are no naked athletes walking around locker rooms anymore when the media is in there. It simply doesn't happen. It's a stereotype that just doesn't exist.
I was involved in that era too, John, when I was in the Bears locker room after the games doing the post-game interviews when women were first allowed in. And it was a wholly different situation.
Yeah.
Because guys just came out of the shower, you know.
Well, and
they didn't have
right.
the facilities they have now.
And in retrospect, I don't think that was such a Neanderthal position. If you look at it in the context of all along, the men have been naked in the locker room. Women haven't been in there. Now we have to make an accommodation. And we made the right call on it. Women have access to the locker room. Now everybody's figured it out. But
they still played every Sunday.
Yeah, you know? But at that turning point, it was people had to get their heads around it. And I'm willing to let them fumble a little bit as they do so.
It was a big deal at the time, but not anymore. Not for 20 years.
Yeah. In fact, when you play it now, it sounds a little antiquated. I appreciate your call, Tony. It's nice of you to listen. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
All right. So if you're just joining this conversation, Don Cherry's this announcer in Canada on the Saturday night hockey game. Yeah, they really do. A Saturday night hockey game. And in between periods, he was... some of you are texting me saying, John, the poppies are not worn on Veterans Day. Okay, I believe you on that. I'm not real good at this. I'm telling you that he was upset about not seeing enough poppies on the streets.
Downtown Toronto, forget it, downtown Toronto. Nobody wears a poppy. You people love, they come here, whatever it is. You love our way of life. You love our milk and honey. At least you could pay a couple of bucks for poppies.
You people is what got him fired. You people. Hey, by the way, on the free speech front, just another note about what happened over at the, is it the Daily? Yeah, the paper at Northwestern. The students over there covered Jeff Sessions when he spoke at campus. I read their long. I think the first sin was actually not getting an editor to chop this story up a little bit, but they wrote a story about Jeff Sessions, and some of the students applauded what Jeff Sessions said when he was on campus, and some people didn't like it, but the story was non-editorial. It was, I thought, a straight-up report about Sessions speaking on campus. Then they heard from, it sounds like, their classmates, the students did, on social media and other ways. And so they apologized then for their coverage of Sessions coming onto campus. They wrote, "Our photo coverage of the event, some protesters found the photos posted to reporters' Twitter accounts re-traumatizing and invasive. Those photos have since been taken down." They wrote, "Some students voiced concerns about the methods the staff used to reach out to them. We used the Northwestern directory to get phone numbers. Some of you did not like that invasion of privacy."
I mean, just repeat that, will you?
I'm not going to repeat it.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
All day long.
Here's John Williams.
What we do here. You don't always agree with them, but at least give us credit for thinking them. It's 2:06. We're in the Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. Thanks for tuning in. This is John Williams. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 on social media. I'm WGN King John. Don't miss our Mincing Rascals podcast, Judge Best in the State. Hokey smokes. AV Club is a website. Maybe you go to, maybe you don't. It's a good website. It covers AV stuff, you know, television, movies, things like that. They had the 100 best TV shows of the 2010s, Like a Moth to Light, I Couldn't Resist. The 100 best TV shows of the 2010s. Hey, have you guys watched TV in the last decade? Because this is about that.
Sometimes, I have.
Mm-hmm.
My Saturday producer, Griffin Filipich, is also in the studio. Hi, Griffin.
Hey.
You watch this stuff, too. Do you know how many shows are available? How many scripted shows are available this year?
How many?
495. You know, you say, boy, there's a glut of shows. That's not episodes. That's individual shows, each of which have 6 or 15 episodes.
Yeah.
There's so much to watch out there.
And yet still, you can never decide what to watch.
Yeah. And yet still, there's not the show for me.
I look. Well, that's why I do think at least lists like this are helpful, because while they get it wrong, at least they remind you, wow, that's right. That was a good show. I could go back and watch it.
Yeah, there's not a list that you are unwilling to get mad at.
Well, that's because they do it on purpose.
But I will say, and we're going to be seeing a round of lists like this in the next month or two. We've already seen a bunch of them. Decade-end lists. People like to reflect on the decade that's passed. And you could get mad at all of them, but not all of them are valid. This one, I think, AV Club is a good one to reckon with, because they are in the trenches of TV and have been for a really long time, like reviewing a lot of shows week in, week out. I don't agree with everything they say, but you could get mad at every list and just go insane. This is a good one to actually focus on. With music, it's a different website or a different publication.
So then...
Worthwhile conversation around this particular list.
And they're legit in this space, but then are they also just tweaking it a little bit to capture my attention, or do you agree with them on pretty much everything they said?
No, I don't agree with that, but that's not the point of a list.
The Good Place is number 6 on their list. Think about that. The Good Place was the 6th best TV show of the decade.
Yeah, I agree. That was too high.
And can I just give you one other thing that was outrageous?
Not the only example of recency bias, I think. You get some of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
and that's fair enough.
I think they should wait 5 years to actually make these. You've got time for the dust to settle. And then you're like, oh.
And some of them are 5 years old because it's of the decade.
Right.
Game of Thrones, just to show how clever and smart they are. Game of Thrones, is it number one? No, it's not, is it, Griffin? Is it number two?
It's number 30.
It's number 30.
What?
See, now that's what I'm... Thank you, Lauren Lapka. That's why I like Lauren
Lapka. Hold on a second, though. I actually think that's a good placement because everyone... And it wasn't you. I'm not accusing you of this, but if we're going to be mad about Game of Thrones not being higher, we also have to go back on being furious about the end, which most people were.
That's and why they cite that they put it at 30.
Yeah. So that kind of makes sense, right?
I don't know.
do you both like the ending?
I'm not saying I liked it.
That's not the answer. That question is not
It's a part of the show. It's
important. But it shouldn't be that weighted.
No, not at all.
Sorry, Griffin.
Says you. I don't know if that's
says
exactly
me
true.
Is right.
Really? So how many seasons did Game of Thrones
I didn't make
run?
The list, by the
was
way.
Was it 100 years long? How long was Game of Thrones on? Like 8 years?
It was on like for
thing?
The entire, basically the entirety of the decade, 2011 to 2019.
And the last couple episodes they got wrong, and people are like, well, that's it. I'm not having it.
Well, no,
that's
still
all we talked about this decade was Game of Thrones.
It's still in the top 30.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Like you said, there's a million shows. I think to be on this list at all, it looks like when you see it all laid out, there's so many choices that it's like, oh, this must be everything that there was on TV. But in fact, a ton of stuff gets left off of a list of 100 because, like you said, there have been a million shows.
There's been 495. I said this year. It's actually in 2018, presumably more in 2019. 2018, 495 scripted shows. And they start at 2019 and go back to, obviously, 2010.
And that's think of how much TV has changed in these 10 years, too. That's what's so interesting. If you made this list for the 2000s, it would be a million times easier because there were not nearly that many shows. And most of them were coming from places that you traditionally went to TV for. Now there's so much to keep track of, including streaming. We just, in the past 11 days, there have been two huge streaming services launched that are going to change everything for the next 10 years.
Large budgets going into episodes.
Yeah, and Game of Thrones had a lot to do with that, yeah.
Well, so I guess the definition of what's a TV show is interesting. You've watched most of these, and you don't even
have... I haven't watched most of these.
You've watched a lot of these. You don't even have working
TV. I can talk about it.
Do you have a working television?
No.
Okay, so you are consuming these things without a TV. So what is a TV show anymore? Master of None is number 87.
Should we do like the top 10 just to give a... And then because we talked for a long time about this, and I think we mentioned like three shows.
Okay.
And we just run through the top 10 to give people an idea of what you're so mad about.
Okay, sure, fine. Let's do that. Number 10 is Fleabag.
Right.
Number 9 is 30 Rock. That's a good recent and enduring setup. Like that. I have no problem with that.
Confusing for a million reasons. One of them is that 30 Rock didn't start in this past decade, but it had the majority of its episodes air in this last decade. That was part of their criteria for putting it together. You have to make some weird decision like that.
Fleabag is 10, high, but okay, it's a fun show. 30 Rock I thought was terrific. Why are you making that face?
Keep going.
Bob's Burgers is 8.
That's a funny show, but come on, still higher than Game of Thrones?
Bob's Burgers is very good.
22 places higher. Griffin, you're
okay, you got to let Game of Thrones go.
We're going to bludgeon him with this for the next 20 minutes. Bob's Burgers is 8. The Leftovers is 7. The Good Place is 6. Griffin, your thoughts about The Good Place at 6?
I think it's extremely high. I really like that show. And
I do, too.
It wouldn't be in my top 20.
I would say, would you agree with me with this? The Good Place was one of the most innovative, clever network shows you've ever seen.
And it's a network show. That's one thing that I think people like about it is that it does new things in a traditional space.
It was a really fun series.
You're furious about someone recommending it.
Yes, I am.
They couldn't win. They couldn't possibly win with this kind of attitude.
The Americans is 5. I'll let that seep for a little bit. You all judge amongst yourselves. Parks and Recreation 4. You
right.
can't argue with that. Atlanta number 3. Totally agree with that. Mad Men 2. Breaking Bad number 1.
Okay, Breaking Bad I would have had second, so that's
to,
fair.
To Game of Thrones?
That's like you wrote that list, John Williams.
I know. This is in my wheelhouse. 1, 2, 3. No argument with me. That's for sure.
I never watched Mad Men and I never watched Breaking Bad.
Wow.
Are you serious?
I've, I have actually never finished Breaking Bad, but Mad Men is the best show of all time.
When somebody tells me they have not watched Mad Men, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, West Wing, some of my favorite episodic television events, I'm like so happy for you because I know you have a great discovery that awaits you. You know, I don't know if you're going to win the lottery. I do know you can watch all of the episodes of Mad Men.
Mad Men and Breaking Bad both premiered in the later half of the 2000s, but they apply for this list because they aired most of their episodes in the 2010s. And they really started a new chapter of, like, TV discourse and viewing, which was prestige TV shows on cable, moving away from the traditional networks to doing big stuff on cable channels that weren't HBO. HBO always had that, like, air of prestige or whatever you want to call it. They had that brand of, like,
the
quality.
Panache.
Yes, exactly. And other networks on cable realized we can just make that for ourselves. And that changed everything. With AMC doing these two shows, FX had a lot of that. And it kind of created the boom.
Where's The Wire on this list?
I was just thinking that, Steve.
I don't think it didn't apply.
Why not?
Because it's 2000s.
This is 2010.
Oh, it's too old.
That was before 2010?
This is the 2010s.
That's another show I didn't watch. But,
same.
but I did just catch up to one season of it. And, you know, it's very good. Right. Yeah.
Griffin did find four shows that apply whose absence is, I think, notable. We'll get to that in a second. And plus, where did Chernobyl, the HBO documentary last year, who watched Chernobyl? Did you guys see that?
Yes.
The HBO
it's not a documentary.
It's a docuseries. What was it about?
No, it was a drama series.
Drama series, yeah.
I guess docuseries is wrong.
I did not watch it for the first months because you guys had me thinking it was a documentary.
Why? Oh. How could you have thought that? What was he saying it was a documentary? Even now, months after it came out.
Wow, Griff, I'm really glad you came in. So let's pause and, Griff, at least give us the ones that maybe it should or should not have been there, but were notable. And then some others that got ranked way too high and way too low. Maybe you've got an observation. We'd love to hear it. 312-981-7200. 100 best shows of the 2010s at AV Club. AV Club's a website that does, what do they do at AV Club, Griffin?
Movie and TV criticism, music, books.
Our Saturday producer, Griffin Filipich, in the studio, he follows that site more closely than I do. They did a 100 best TV shows of the 2010s. We're talking about it because they got a lot of it wrong, and I'm outraged, and Griffin says maybe I shouldn't be.
No, you shouldn't be, but that doesn't mean they didn't get it wrong.
The
wrong is the fun. The debate is the fun. So when you see something you disagree with, you should relish it, not to...
What were the shows that you thought were... Here's four shows that weren't on the list.
Mm. Oh, you want me?
Yeah, well, you've got them. I don't.
Ones that I would like or ones that I was... I have two categories. Shows that weren't on there that I wish were on there that are my favorites, and then ones that I was just surprised weren't there.
Give me both.
Okay, so I was surprised that they didn't have Downton Abbey anywhere in the top 100, Walking Dead, Peaky Blinders, House of Cards, True Detective. These are all big name shows that were a huge deal that don't appear in that list.
How is Walking Dead not on there? How is Walking Dead not on
there? This is not good.
You don't think
it's a huge deal. It's like keeping AMC afloat. It's the biggest show on TV, maybe, debatably. But I don't think it's been good for a long time.
I agree with you on that. But boy, was But boy, was it a good big deal when it started. I thought it was transcendent in some ways. Everybody. I'll tell you another one. House of Cards. Do you remember what a buzz House of Cards was?
That's the first Netflix original TV show. That's
a big deal.
They broke
the fourth wall. And it was people love that show. And those are big stars, too.
Yeah.
Are they mad at Kevin Spacey? Is that what it is? Why isn't that on there?
Maybe. I mean, it makes it a little more tricky to talk about, I suppose. But I think critical opinion maybe has kind of come and gone on that one a little bit, too, anyway.
So Bob's Burgers is way better than that.
Oh, well, I do think so, yeah. Bob's Burgers, you can't use that one.
Okay, I won't.
You don't know anything about Bob's Burgers. You think it's safe to go to that, but it's a great show.
It's very clever.
It's called Bob's Burgers. That's all I need to know.
It's like in the tradition of The Simpsons, though. It's a very good show.
All right, fair enough.
And you speaking of the Kevin Spacey thing did remind me that Louie is not on this list, the FX series that he did for a number of years. And you could say maybe they left it off because of similar things. It's sort of tricky to talk about given what people think of him, what he's done, which is all fair. But I will say that show, in terms of changing half-hour shows on TV from, thinking of them traditionally as sitcoms to something much darker and stranger, which is a huge trend in the last 10 years.
You said Kevin Spacey, you meant Louis C.K., right?
Well, we're talking about both of them. Maybe I mixed them up.
Okay.
Sorry. Louis was sort of at the vanguard of changing half-hour TV into something that could be more dramatic and intense and weird and also funny. It actually wasn't my favorite show. I wouldn't have it on my list either.
No kidding.
But the AV Club did write a lot about it and love it at the time.
Well, there's some shows that are you would like to see on there that you haven't told us?
Parenthood on NBC was one of my favorite shows ever, and it's not on here. That's a disgrace. That actually turns me into you. That makes me really mad.
Well, I'm sorry for you on that, Griffin. What do you think about that, Steve?
I think that's the funniest show I would ever pick Griffin to fall in love with.
I can't explain except that I love that family, the Bravermans. They mean the world to me. They're my own family. I'm a honorary Braverman.
What else is not on the list that you wish?
Baskets was that TV show with Zach Galifianakis where he played a clown.
Yeah.
That was an unbelievably funny and weird show that I think should be somewhere in 100. Kroll Show was you find that I tend towards comedies and sort of stranger comedies. But Kroll Show was a sketch show with Nick Kroll, the comedian, and that went for 3 seasons on Comedy Central. Hilarious. I absolutely loved it. And Desus and Mero, they're now on Showtime doing a talk show weekly or a few times a week. When they were on Viceland for a few years, that just ended about a year ago, what they did with the late night talk show was like really innovative and special.
I think a lot of people in our audience have never heard of Desus and Mero. It is terrific. These guys are so natural, so funny, so honest.
Yeah.
They're smart, but they don't try to be. And they get A-list guests. And it's a couple of guys sitting in chairs looking at the screen. At least it was like this on Viceland.
Right. Now it's on Showtime. And I don't like it as much because they're kind of trying to step it up to be something a little more polished and professional. Yeah. And it's still a good show. But what they were doing in the beginning, I thought was just like, I'd never seen anything like it. I loved it so much.
If you came up to a couple of really funny guys, just watching them riff away in your basement with minimal effects, and you were thoroughly entertained for a half hour, that's Desus and Mero.
That's right.
I don't even know how to spell that, but search that. You'll thank me in the morning. Okay, some phone calls for you, Griff. Let's start with Bill. We'll get to you, Bill. We'll go in the order they came, and that's Bob. Hey, Bob, you're on WGN. What do you want to say?
How are you guys doing? For one, I wanted to start out with that Bertrand rocks. Sexy driver, Bob. I took him to the airport one day, and he's an awesome dude. You should feel very lucky to have a news guy like Bertrand. He's the best.
I'm much nicer in person, aren't I?
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Well,
for sure.
Well, I sure
nice
hope
family.
So.
I hope good
so.
Guy.
All right. What else you got?
But anyways, I just kind of, as I was listening to you guys, a lot of these shows I haven't seen, but I don't know. I think they should be kind of categorized as like series shows where, you know, like Breaking Bad, it's kind of like having a painting. You know, somebody shows if it's not a finished show where they have an actual ending, that you're judging a show kind of like a painting that's half done. With Breaking Bad, I thought it was masterful writing where they actually had the, to me, I haven't spoke to anybody that didn't like the ending. They took that show and tied it up into a perfect, a present for you with a beautiful bow on top and gave it to you.
Now, you know you're in the minority on that, right?
That's not true, I don't think. People like the ending of Breaking Bad, right?
Breaking Bad. No, I'm thinking of Game of Thrones. Pardon me, my bad.
I'm focusing on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Bob, thank you for the phone call. Thank you for saying those kind words. I agree with 75% of them about Steve Bertrand.
Okay.
Have a good day. Bill, you're on WGN Radio. Bill, what did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, a lot of those shows you're talking about, I never saw them myself, like Bob, the cab driver there, said. Yeah, but the thing I don't like is these shows like Game of Thrones and all those shows. It's like watching a soap opera. You got to watch it every week or every day, or you lose track, or you find out, well, the same people are sleeping back with the same guy he slept with before, or the same person. And also, the thing Griffin said something a little bit ago about he didn't own a TV set, I think.
Yeah.
Does he watch his stuff on his phone and on his laptop? Because I'm old enough, I remember when the first TV came out at 17 inches and 12 inches, and they kept getting bigger, and everybody wanted bigger sets. Then I remember when the little 9-volt transistor radio came out.
Hold on one second, because I'm going to run out of time. But it is interesting. The very first generation of people watching TV were watching it on very big or clear or crisp screens either.
Right.
But how do you consume television then?
On my computer a lot. And then I do have a TV. I just don't have cable. So I plug the computer into the TV.
Girls is 61. Thank you for the call.
Girls too low.
Killing Eve 59. Black Mirror 58. The Good Wife, 53. The Good Wife, the best casting and outfits alone should get it at 53. Sharp Objects, 51. Terrific. Love that show.
Another show, those two lows, High Maintenance. One of my favorite shows of the of modern time.
We are out of time, Greg. So thanks for coming in and saying hi.
Thank you.
We talked to Griffin on Saturdays. He produces that show. Appreciate him coming in today. A couple of texts, Steve. Maybe you can help me with a couple questions that have poured in. Hey, John, where is The Walking Dead on that list of the 100 best shows of the decade? It's not on the list. That was our point.
Never did that one.
John, the decade isn't over until December 31st.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, I know. I didn't make the list.
Right.
Hey, John, what's up with Eddie Johnson's investigation of himself? How come it's gone away from the media? Eddie Johnson's not investigating himself, but the inspector
general
of the police department is.
I don't think it's gone away.
And I don't think it's gone away either. I don't know what they're doing, but it's not getting buried. It's just not being talked about until there is more to report. John, poppies are sold in the United States for Memorial Day. We talked about this Canadian announcer who was outraged people weren't wearing poppies on Veterans Day. And thanks for the clear up, everybody. It's not confusing necessarily, maybe just to me. In the United States, we don't all sport poppies on the 11th of November. In Canada, they do. He was upset that you people, you immigrants, aren't. And that got him fired. John, my wife and I watch quite a bit of TV, including Netflix, broadcast TV, cable TV. On Monday night, we were watching a special showing of the last episode of MASH.
Mm.
We were reminded what a great show on broadcast TV that was.
I never saw the last episode because I was working as a college TV reporter covering it. And, you know, you just didn't have the wherewithal to record the shows then. The VHS
That's
hadn't
a good
really,
point. Yeah. If you missed it, you missed it.
Right.
John, what about Arrested Development? That is on the list. We watched
that
one.
That's a great show.
That's about, what is Arrested Development about? A dysfunctional family on the south side of Chicago. Is that,
no, that's Shameless. No.
That's Shameless. My bad. Ding, ding, ding.
Arrested Development is the...
family that gets in trouble for fraud.
Henry Winkler's plays the lawyer. And
yes. The dad goes to jail, and so the son is trying to keep the business afloat and...
And it's
the family's
scam.
Just crazy.
And the best prop in that, the fact that the car that they end up having is the stair truck for airlines, you know, where the truck drives up to an airplane and there's stairs on there. And that's the vehicle they drive around in some of the episodes. John, I'm with Griffin. Parenthood, love that show. The first two seasons of Homeland didn't make the list of the top 100. And that's another one that, boy, when that came out, we just could not stop watching it.
And so these are only American shows, right? There's no British shows thrown in there?
Why? What are you looking for?
Well, I'm just wondering, like Sherlock I liked, or, nope. I don't, or Broadchurch is what I was thinking of first, the first episode, first season.
I didn't
season.
See that on the list either.
But that was a BBC show.
Yeah, I wonder if they were excluded. They looked at 500 different series in 2018 alone. Girls is number 61. Wasn't my cup of tea, but whenever I saw an episode of Girls, I find myself going, wow, this is stuff I haven't seen before. Would you agree with me on
yes.
that?
Sometimes for the better.
Sharp Objects, Gillian. Is it Gillian or Gillian Flynn novel?
I believe it's Gillian.
On HBO. Really good. Right. Thank you, Elif. We do have a winner for the... KC and the Sunshine Band tickets, Rob and Crestwood. Congratulations, Rob. You get the tickets. Everybody else, you go buy them on your own. Rob just won them. Succession is number 33. New Girl, 32. Game of Thrones, famously number 30. Here's the show that I'm going to go back and watch, having looked at this list. Russian Doll on Netflix. Number 28.
I didn't quite get it. I mean, it was great for the concept of it, but...
It's a woman who every day kind of wakes up, sort of like Groundhog Day, reliving her day.
Right.
And each episode, and she dies all the time.
Oh, you liked it? You saw it?
Badly. I don't know that I watched the thing all the way through.
Okay.
I'm going to give it another try. I'm going to give it another try.
You do that.
All right. It smells real good in the studio. I know that doesn't do much good for you in Radioland, but listen to this now. Danny O'Malley, the founder of Before the Butcher, is back in our studio, and Brandon O'Malley with the meatless meat patties from Before the Butcher. At least I think that's what we've got here. Hey, welcome back.
Hey, John, good to see you again.
Which one are you, Brandon or Danny?
Well, I think I'm still Danny, unless something's changed along the way.
Is that Brandon over there?
That's Brandon.
Brandon over there, yeah. Danny over here. Danny, yeah. Welcome back.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it.
Last year in our studio, it was, I don't know where exactly it was in its sort of product life, but it wasn't at all the grocery stores in Chicago.
That's right. That's right.
So you were, in fact, you were at the trade show in town, weren't you?
Correct. Correct. We were at the National Restaurant Association show. And we were already launched into food service, but now we have launched into retail.
Yeah, so because that was the thing. It's like, all right, this is good. What can I do? I can't buy it. Now I can buy your, and the brand that I'm going to look for is what?
Uncut.
Uncut.
Right.
How am I going to remember that? What's the hook there? I guess it's not cut like meat would
That's
be.
Right, that's
it's
right.
It's not gone to a yeah. butcher. This is uncut.
Exactly. So before the butcher is the name of the company, and then uncut is the brand.
So when I look in the food section at the grocery store on the box, I'm going to see uncut.
Correct.
Burgers, uncut chicken, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So we have four different flavors. They're all patties. We have our uncut plant-based burger because they're all plant-based. We also have our uncut savory chicken burger, an uncut roasted turkey burger, really good for this time of the year, right?
Yeah.
And then our uncut breakfast sausage, the one that I believe was your favorite last time we came in.
I think it was. By the way, this is not a commercial. If you're wondering if we are giving Danny some time here because he's paying for it, he's not. I think this is a fascinating category at the grocery store. It's one I don't readily embrace. My wife has been eating these kinds of non-meat burgers forever. I never order them because I'm just slow to change. And I like meat, you know? This is made out of soybeans?
Yes, we use a non-GMO soybean. That's what
non-GMO.
We use. By the way, you are our typical customer. More than 80% of our consumer base are meat eaters.
Will they continue to eat meat, or are they going to transition completely away from meat to your product?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this much. They will enjoy these products from time to time. They may or may not completely convert over, but they will look for options like this because they're going to want to eat plant-based from time to time.
And maybe that's what's going to happen. In my world right now, Brenda will always eat a non-meat product when she can.
Yeah.
I will always eat a meat product when I can. But maybe in the future, we will eat both.
Right, right. Well, do you ever try her non-meat products, whatever she's eating?
I've had a bite of like a soybean burger or something, and I couldn't finish it.
Yeah.
But I eat more fish now than I used to. Let's not talk about meat. But I think that somewhere in between, there will be people who will say, yeah, I eat beef a lot.
Right.
I like these other category products enough that I'll order them instead of a cheeseburger at a restaurant sometimes.
Sure.
So what did you bring in here? Can I try some?
Yeah. We've got some things for you to try. So we've got the burger.
Oh, we should. No, wait. Do we have some for the. Hey, Aleph, we should watch some of this into the newsroom.
You guys cleaned me out last time, so I made sure I brought enough for everybody to try.
Okay, well, let's
do this. Come in and try these.
Do I need to take a break now, Ms. Garris, or I got a few minutes? Okay, keep going. So, what have you got?
Okay, so we've got. I dressed up some with a little tomato and lettuce, and then I've got some plain here. So, we've got this is the burger and our turkey burger over here, and then we've got the breakfast sausage. And over here is the chicken burger.
Okay, so hand me one of the breakfast sausages to start. And now, if you should walk in here, get some of this and walk it into the newsroom, too. Let Kim or Steve or Lauren Lapker or somebody else. Lauren, you want to try some of this stuff? Do you normally eat this sort of stuff anyway,
Lauren? I don't. I'm like you. I'm a little hesitant. I'm willing to try, though.
Okay, so this is the sausage here, and this one is the, what is this?
That one is our plant-based chicken burger.
All right, let me try. So the sausage was good, as I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's
it has the right feel.
That is the key. It's that bite, the chew, the texture. We're pretty good at getting the flavor there. The texture is the biggest challenge when we're creating products to mimic animal-based meats.
I'll tell you what, this uncut stuff, if you get the breakfast sausage, is that what that is?
That is the breakfast sausage.
And you serve that, people won't know the difference.
Yeah.
In fact, they'll think it's a good... And who cares what's in it? And maybe you do. I mean, you should.
Yeah, you should.
But that's not meat, right?
No, it's 100% plant-based. It's gluten-free. Of course, the bun that it's on is not gluten-free, but our product is gluten-free. It's also non-GMO.
I'm going to now I'm having this.
That's the chicken burger.
The chicken burger. I don't know that I'm going to like this one as
well. Oh, come on. Give it a try.
Tastes completely like chicken.
It's better than chicken. I've had people say, because chicken doesn't have an awful lot of flavor until you add flavor to it. We have some really nice flavor in there, but that's nice, isn't it? got a good bite and chew and texture.
That's really good.
Thank you.
It does not have the, it's not as firm as chicken. It's like a chicken patty.
Yeah.
Well, it is a patty.
That's what it is.
Okay, but I mean, but you can't create a chicken breast. You don't have that sort of toughness that you might want if you were eating some kinds of chicken.
There is some technology out there right now to do that type of thing. It's not quite this is there, in my opinion.
Okay.
So but it's pretty amazing.
You're two for two. I know one of these I don't like so much.
Yeah, so the other one here is the turkey and then our uncut beef-like patty as well.
I'll try the beef next because maybe the turkey's too much like the chicken.
And you can say, where's the beef on that one?
Actually, this is funny, too, because you've got this. It looks medium rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks
look
dark
at the texture on it. It's got a grind that looks like ground beef, right?
Yeah, I'm dubious. Here we go.
Okay. And now the official opinion.
Yeah, I got more tomato on there than I got ground beef. Let me pull a little of it off the backside.
It wasn't the best tomato, I'm sorry to say. Mm-hmm. I wish it was.
That's okay. No, okay. This is not my favorite. It's not bad. It's not bad. It is better than the thing that Brenda ordered once that I had, which was some soybean thing. You'll do fine with that.
Yeah,
but I will get the chicken and the sausage first.
Right.
And then you have the turkey as
well. The turkey.
How salty are these?
So the advantage of our products is we're 30 to 40% and sometimes 50% less sodium in our products than the competitors. So it is more than a regular burger, because a regular burger, ground beef, only has about 70 or 80 milligrams of sodium per 4-ounce patty, and ours is at 260 milligrams. But most of our competitors are between 400 and 600 milligrams, so we purposely kept the sodium down.
I got a couple other questions for you about this sort of stuff. Danny O'Malley's in our studio. He came to Chicago for the trade show from Before the Butcher, the company that makes these products. The label that you'll find at the grocery store is uncut there, Mariano's. Are you going to be at other stores, too?
So,
hold on a second.
Okay.
Answer that question after this. This is John Williams, and it's, you know, the sort of I don't want to say changing of the guard, but I'll say that. I think in the food industry, when you go to get ground beef at the grocery store, it used to be you could get 85%, 90%, 95% lean to fat. But you were getting ground beef, and then you get ground turkey or ground chicken. But now you're getting these ground patties that aren't animal at all. They are, they're uncut, as the label says. And Danny O'Malley's company, Before the Butcher, makes these products. They're Mariano's. Is that right?
So we are officially in Mariano's in Western Springs today.
Okay.
And in the next month, we'll be in all the Mariano's, and then we're also extending into Wisconsin with Pick and Save and Metro Market.
How hard is it to get into the Jewels, Jewel food stores? Are you guys in Jewel?
Not yet.
Yeah, you're working on that, right?
Of course.
Are they defensive about it, or is it like a financial thing? Like you have to pay so much for shelf space, and they're just not going to give it to you for nothing?
No, we've been fortunate right now because this is a pretty hot segment. People are really interested. The consumers out there are going into the grocery stores looking for these type of products, and the retailers are jumping at it right now. So we haven't had to pay for shelf space, but that may come in due time.
What do four patties like that cost me?
So... it comes in a two-pack, and two-pack is retailing at $5.49.
How does that compare to ground beef at the same price or the same
It would quantity? Be on the higher end, so it would be more comparable to like a grass-fed organic at this point.
I see. Is that, and are you comfortable with that price point? Is
yeah,
that
these are premium products, so we are today, but there will be products that come out in the near future that are more comparable to commodity-based beef products or chicken products.
And I also think it's interesting why people will choose these. Maybe they like the flavor. Maybe they don't want to eat meat.
Right.
But if you don't want to eat meat, it seems to me you want to eat healthy. And the sodium content on these is higher. So I'm not sure that I wouldn't be better eating lean beef than eating salty non-beef. I wonder what the healthier choice is.
Yeah, well, these are cholesterol-free. There's some concerns, obviously, with beef and how it affects your body as well as other animal-based products. But this is a bigger picture. This is about our planet as well and the health of our planet. And the resources that are used to make these products are significantly less than the resources that are necessary for animal agriculture.
Right. So cow production uses a lot of resources
right.
relative to what? Soybeans? Is that what we're talking about?
Of course. And then the process for us to take it from the field to the plate, basically.
Right. So the processing of a soybean is... uses less energy, if you will.
That's right. And certainly better for the environment in many respects.
Do you try and make them healthier or as healthy as possible? Like, all right, soybeans, that's fine, but why don't you put some kale in their spinach or something in there? Seriously, I mean, how do you blend it?
We are trying to mimic the bite, chew, texture, and taste of ground beef or ground chicken or ground turkey or animal-based product. And if you add, kale in there or some kind of other true vegetable, it makes those are more veggie burgers. This is a plant-based burger. There certainly is a distinguishing differences between the
two. Who's your biggest competitor in that category? Who else does this?
So the two biggest competitors would be Beyond Meat with the Beyond Burger and the Impossible Burger. Those are two biggest ones on the market.
And then Uncut is now maybe a choice number three if you're looking at those two. I guess that would be a relevant side-by-side as well.
Sure.
You could compare your stuff to Jimmy Dean's, but how about if we compared your stuff to Impossible or somebody else?
I'm in that game. I love it. And we have a variety they don't. So they're both on the market with one burger, and we've got a full family of burgers here.
What's the best one of yours?
Well, that's all about the... You're asking my opinion, right? So the one that you probably liked the least was the chicken. That's the one I love the most.
No, the beef was the one that was my favorite.
Okay. Yeah. I love the chicken. Yeah.
Incidentally, I tried the turkey. So you brought in the sausage, the beef, the chicken, and the turkey patties. The only one that I would not choose is the beef. It's probably going to be your best seller. The sausage patty, I think, is superior to the stuff that you get it from a butcher. The one that surprised me was the turkey. I tried that during the break. And it tastes like, feels like ground turkey, but it's got a buttery flavor.
Yeah. Isn't that
great? And it's not overwhelming, but it's, I don't know that you were trying to go for the word butterball and when you put this together, but it has that sort of fatty flavor of butter in there as well. Yeah.
So build yourself a burger with that burger, the turkey burger. Add a little stuffing, a little cranberry sauce, and you've got yourself a nice Thanksgiving dinner, don't you?
A vegetarian one.
That's right.
Bill, you had a question. You're on WGN. Hi.
Yeah, I got a question. I know he's got this patent, but what chemical do you use to make it taste like beef, chicken, and turkey and that stuff? Because there's got to be a chemical or a product. And also... how can you say these are healthier when they're so high in salt content? Well, you can take a plain beef patty, and I know you got cholesterol to worry about if you got a lean piece of beef. But if you take a lean piece of beef and grind it and fry it into a burger and add no salt, you have no sodium at all.
Okay, let's let him comment on both of those.
Well, I'm not going to differ with you on that, but there will be some natural sodium in the product. So... our products are all 100% plant-based, and they're all natural ingredients. I can't get into the proprietary nature of the spice blend that we use to create the flavors, but I can tell you that it's all natural and it is plant-based. In regards to the sodium level, when you compare our products to our competitors on the market, we are between 30 and 75% less sodium. We did that purposely because we were trying to get as close as we could to mimic the flavor of ground beef and ground turkey and ground chicken. So there's no perfect science to this. I mean, we are doing our best to create the healthiest products that we can possibly create that mimic animal-based proteins.
You got some scientists with lab coats on that are looking at, like, is it cinnamon and pepper and paprika? I mean, are these the things that create the flavors?
There are scientists that all they do is create flavor profiles, create the smells, create the texture. I mean, they are specific to those different areas when we're making these type of products.
John, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you?
I'm wondering if these products go through your digestive system any differently. I'm an older guy, and my digestive system's a little finicky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. It really is. Well, I can't tell you what your digestive system's like, but I can tell you when you introduce different or new food items to your system, you do need to make an adjustment. Now, you may or may not with this product. I can't tell you specifically. I don't know what your system is like, but I can tell you that what's going into your system is 100% plant-based and all natural.
Thanks for the call, John, and good luck to you. Paula, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Questions. I have been eating Boca Burgers, and I want to know how his products compare and what is his brand name.
What's a Boca Burger?
It's a veggie burger.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know that. Boca Burgers are veggie burgers?
Yeah, it's actually one of the original ones. The Garden Burger and the Boca Burger are a couple of the original veggie burgers. Now, we don't consider ours, quote-unquote, a veggie burger. We call them plant-based burgers because they're meant to mimic ground beef or ground turkey or any kind of animal-based product in such a way that it's almost difficult to distinguish the difference between the two. A veggie burger is, you can tell right away when you're eating something different, and that is different than what a
What's a Boca Burger made of, a veggie burger?
I don't know all the ingredients in it, but they're actually putting vegetables in there, so it has a bite and chew. It's very, generally you bite down, it's soft. It's a bit different texture. You wouldn't begin to think that it was a beef burger in any way, or a chicken burger or turkey burger.
Which is okay, too. If you like that food, eat that food.
Absolutely. So the best way to distinguish it is those type of burgers that came out many years ago, 15, 20 years ago, the Boca Burger and the Garden Burger, were made for vegans and vegetarians. We're making products now that are really made for meat eaters.
We're out of time. So before The Butcher, this company makes something called the Uncut brand of sausage, turkey, chicken, and beef-like patties, and they are in Western Springs at the Mariano's. They'll be throughout Chicagoland next month at Mariano's as well. New market, a new product in the marketplace. Good luck to you, Danny. It's nice to meet you in person again. Thanks for feeding the staff here today.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
We had a busy show today. Among the things we talked about, a preview of the House hearings on the impeachment proceedings that are going to take place tomorrow. Just click on the John Williams page and you'll get a rundown there.